The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day! And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Monday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined as always by my esteemed colleague, the Professor Dave Malinsky.
That was a good opening for a guy who's under the weather today. Coming up today, we're going to go from a bull market to a bear market on one particular college basketball team. How, if you're in Orlando and you want to see some good magic, better be a Disney ticket, not an NBA ticket. And when we get to money time tonight, we're going to talk about how the player rotation for one team yesterday may spur them to a win this evening.
So, Dave, first weekend without real football. We had the Senior Bowl and the Pro Bowl. But, you know, I guess maybe you were watching Pro Bowl yesterday. Somebody had to watch. You got a first take for us on a Monday?
Yeah, I had to watch. We lost money on the Pro Bowl yesterday, but we got some pleasure out of it, a little bit of enjoyment in the second half. Now, if you go back to what we talked about on the show last week, we thought there was a far superior quarterback rotation to the NFC. And you could see that when Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees were actually in the game. But if you tuned in after halftime, you didn't see any of that. Not only did they give Cam Newton the entire second half, but let's call that his fraternity hazing welcome into the NBA. First half, there were no sacks. Very few attempts to sack a quarterback. In fact, you saw several times where the fans were booing because the defensive linemen weren't even rushing upfield. What did that change when Newton took the field? Not only did they sack him, they chase him, they knock him down. The AFC even blitzed a couple times in the fourth quarter, which you can't do unless, of course, everyone is in on the prank, including the officials. We say this because not that players don't like Newton. I think it's because they do. We've seen two signs now in the past month of this acceptance by your peers. There was a classic in the NBA back on December 28th. Miami wins at Charlotte. Dwayne Wade scores with 2 seconds left to win the game. Now, you know that Newton does that Superman thing at times, just like Dwight Howard does. What happens at the end of that game? Well, he's sitting in the front row, courtside, at Charlotte that night. James and Wade, instead of chest bumping each other, instead of showing Superman to the crowd, instead of making any references to the Charlotte bench, they both immediately turned right to Newton, and they did the Superman bit. That's a sign that you've been accepted into a pretty special place by your peers. I think yesterday was, too. I think they had fun. That was his hazing. It cost us money. But it was a little bit fun to watch. Okay, a little under the weather today. Probably a slow weekend, should we say, because of that?
No, I mean, it was supposed to be this weekend, the first weekend without real football. And I had a nice list of tasks I was going to accomplish. I wanted to get my taxes done, get ahead of the game in that regard. If you've ever been to my home office versus Malinsky's home office, Malinsky, you can probably tell by his personality. He's a neat guy. Everything's filed. My office is a mess. And by the end of football season, it's a complete disaster. Papers everywhere. I'm like, so this weekend, I'm going to get my taxes done, going to get my office cleaned up, get all ready for Super Bowl week. Well, you know, and then Isaac gets sick on Friday night. And I'll tell you what, if you don't have a kid and you don't understand the difference between spit up versus throw up, big difference, as I found out the hard way. So you're cleaning up puke at 3 o'clock in the morning. You're not sleeping. So instead of getting all this good stuff done, what'd I do? I watched some basketball. I took a nap. I got a couple of Super Bowl prop bets done. Not quite the weekend that I had hoped for in terms of getting things situated and set away, but there's always next weekend. When's taxes due? April 15th? We got time. But let's set up this week for you. We talked about it a little bit on Friday, but this is what's going to happen this week on the show. Tomorrow, we're going to call it Super Tuesday. Super Bowl side, total. Dave and I are going to break it down. We're going to go back and forth. We're going to offer our opinions. Then on Thursday's show, we're going to go through the props. We'll call it Thursday's Prop Shop. So Tuesday Super Bowl, Thursday Prop Shop. Again, If you miss them live, they're always there archived. If you miss the archived on the day of the show, heck, they'll be archived through the weekend. You can watch them on Saturday or even before the game starts on Sunday. Like all of our shows, you can watch them live. You can download them later on after the fact right from covers.com. So that's the take Tuesday and Thursday. Dave?
We're going to break down the props on Thursday, but let's give a little disclaimer right at the start of the week so you don't get into trouble, because you're going to probably start betting them now. A couple things to keep in mind. Read them carefully. That old notion that tickets go as written, you know, please read your bet before leaving the window. Make sure you fully understand the way these are written, because sometimes in this effort to get so many props out there, books make mistakes. One of the worst beats we've ever seen happen in sports, didn't happen to us, happened to a friend, and we call it a bad beat. It's a bad beat because the guy had made a perfect bet. It's going back about 10 years ago, Minnesota plays the Giants in the NFC Championship game. He doesn't think Minnesota's going to be able to score against the Giant defense. So he bets Gary Anderson, their kicker, under, I think it was under about 6.5 or something like that. Excellent bet. They got shut out. You can't make a better bet than that. You're betting that a team won't score. They got shut out. Now here's the rub. Anderson was the extra point and the field goal kicker. He wasn't the kickoff guy. So if you don't score, Anderson doesn't take the field. He actually lost that bet or got a refund because Anderson didn't actually play. And so many props, they'll stipulate, player must play for there to be action. So make sure you don't get caught in that. And we'll talk about this a little each day before we get into full mode on Thursday. The other thing to be careful about, line movement on props. We've seen writers reference this a little bit, even some quotes and forums. Hey, the wise guys just bet this over, or they just bet this under. Be careful with that. A lot of the money bet on Super Bowl props is arbitrage money, scalping or middling. So if they bet a running back over 52.5, that doesn't mean they're hitting that over 52.5. It might mean that they see a 56 somewhere else, and they're betting the middle. So be careful if you've got a sports book, and you see it's 52.5, and you see it's moving somewhere else, that doesn't necessarily mean you should jump on that. That might not be a bad line. It just may be a line that's available out there for arbitrage to others. Just two little things to keep in mind before we get deeper into the props.
Yeah, and one last little factor or thing to be aware of, I guess, is the appropriate point here. Here in Las Vegas, you're going to see a lot of parlay cards. Vegas loves the parlay cards, and Super Bowl Sunday, the parlay cards are a huge profit center for just about every sportsbook in Las Vegas. Why? Well, the Super Bowl parlay cards are a little bit different from the regular season parlay cards. Number one, they have a lot more proposition wagers. And number two, at most sportsbooks in town, ties lose on the parlay card. So when you're looking and coming to town, when you're coming to the Covers party next Friday night or this Friday night, 7:30 p.m. at the Munch Bar in Caesars, of course, you can still send those emails if you want to RSVP party at covers.com. But when you come to the Super Bowl party, Caesars is one of those books that will have a ties lose parlay card well displayed in their sports book. Just be aware, because for a lot of these props, when it comes to field goals, sacks, all that kind of thing, the number where the ties lose is the number that's most likely to come up. All right, the mailbag has been filling up, so we've got to sort through some of these emails. With a big NBA card tonight, let's take this one from a guy whose name we hope matches what's in his bank account. This email coming from Johnny Millionaire. He says, I use 6-point teasers to great effect during the NFL regular season and even more so during the playoffs. I know it sounds nuts, but I had both sides in the NFC Championship game with San Francisco plus 8.5 and the Giants plus 7.5 and never sweated either side. Now, the question is, when, if ever, do you guys play 4- and 6-point teasers on NBA? It seems like 7-point favorites are a great play because now you're just asking them to win the game. And sometimes if you like the road dog to play strong, adding 4 or 6 to the side gives you wiggle room. Thanks again. It's a great show. Well, thanks for the letter, Johnny. What's your, what's Johnny, right? Johnny Millionaire?
Johnny Millionaire.
Okay, good. Yeah, Mr. Millionaire, I should call you. Thanks for the letter. Dave, initial response.
We don't do a lot with the teasers because over time we found that the math doesn't add up terribly well. But again, similar to the NFL, if you're going to use them, you want to look for low total situations so that those 4 points you're buying represent a higher proportion of all points that are going to be scored. Again, it's same. It's that small dog, the 1-point dog you tease up a little bit, or the 5-point favorite you tease down, because those are the key points inside of the game itself. But now here's the caveat. In this particular season, we're not sure you should be playing teasers at all. The volatility in this year's NBA, and we've talked about this several times on the show, is much wider than it's ever been. A higher percentage of blowouts, these 2-2, 3-3s, 4-5s, 7-9s, these coaches are going out there and occasionally bagging particular games. If they fall behind, said, okay, we're going to let this one go. So there's not a statistical integrity to those results. I'm not sure if someone's supposed to be playing teasers at all the way this season's laying out.
And I have to tell a story because it's what I do in these situations. But it's a story I think that's pertinent to this. My first introduction to sports betting didn't come as a bettor. I graduated Michigan, and I was flat broke. Started working in a sports bar, ended up making book for the clients of that sports bar.
And you can actually be broke and be a bookmaker.
Absolutely. Well, ironically, yeah, the first weekend we were in business, we may well have been out of business had we not won that weekend. But the bottom line is we went in cash poor and came out cash rich. But this is what happened. We knew, and when I say we, there was a partner, me and a partner. We'd been, at that point, we'd never been to Las Vegas. But we knew that teasers were 6 points because NFL teasers were 6 points. And we knew enough to know that throughout the football season, we were giving out six-point NFL teasers and had great success because our clients weren't beating them. So basketball season rolls around. We didn't know the difference. We literally didn't know that a basketball teaser is supposed to be 4 points at minus 110 compared to NFL teasers that were 6 points. So for the entirety of the 1993-94 NBA season, we gave out six-point teasers to any client that wanted them at the same price you'd pay for a four-point teaser. And you know what happened that year? Nobody beat us. We didn't even know we made a mistake till we came out to Vegas the following summer. We're like, oh, I guess we shouldn't be doing this. Teasers are tough to beat in the NBA. I don't recommend
it. When you talk about, you know, similar paths and wrong paths taken in life, because we did the same thing in our college days, but it was strictly with parlay cards. Working as a distributor for a pretty big parlay card operation, and two of us would sit down every Friday night as we collected them from the other students and focus on these three-teamers that crossed each other. Because, again, at that time, the three-teamers are paying 5-1, which is actually pretty low to begin with. And if you got a handful of them, you could find 30 or 35 where a lot of the teams were crossed. Yeah, we put those off to the side, little separate account. Ultimately led to a career path that some may consider to be wrong. But, boy, it's been a fun ride. But, no, we did not offer those odds on teasers, and it's just a shame that in 93 and 94, we didn't know that you were offering them because we would have got an account.
Well, guys, mate, just class. You know, they were teasing totals. You know, don't tease totals. If you want to tease sides, maybe I can talk to you. Teasing totals, not a winning long-term proposition. But speaking of teasing, let's tease you guys about, well, we already teased about the Super Bowl party. Let's tease you guys. Ha-ha, you didn't send enough emails. Actually, we're getting great emails all weekend. Please keep them coming. We're going to get through the backlog of emails throughout the course of this week. The email address, of course, sportsday@covers.com. You can follow us on Twitter, getting new followers every single day, @VegasSportsDay. And, of course, you can get involved in the community with active threads and discussions going right now, covers.com/postingforum.
Up next, you want to see some ugly Mickey Mouse basketball? Then Orlando really is the place right now. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
Hi, I'm Chris Phillips from Talk Tales, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And if you stop by the studio, our producer Scott's going to buy everybody a drink.
Okay, guys, scrub up. Let's get those surgical gowns on. Time for the postmortem, where we take you deep inside the game to show you the things you should be seeing, but probably aren't.
Since taking to the air a little over 3 months ago, we've turned Baylor as a play of the day twice. We turned to Baylor, I should say, as a play of the day twice. And there's been a common denominator in both of those results. Both times, the Bears built up double-digit leads in the second half and seemed to be in control. Once, right down the street from us here against West Virginia, and the other time in that pre-Christmas tournament game at the Orleans Arena, and then the other time this past weekend at home in Waco against Texas. Both times, Baylor was able to win the game, but failed to get the money. Often, if there's a losing ticket with a good team that was right there, there'll be little hesitation to come right back with that team, taking advantage of the fact that losing ATS can help keep the value where we want it. But now, in two Baylor autopsies, we find a similar pattern that does urge some caution supporting the Bears going forward. This is a team that is loaded with size and athleticism. They got as high as number 3 in the national polls just 2 weeks ago. The marketplace sees this size and athleticism, and they like it. But today, it's time to focus on the little things that do not necessarily show themselves unless they go under the magnifying glass right here in postmortem.
We liked a lot of the same things the markets liked from Baylor early in the year. They can run. They can jump. They've got players. You've got, you know, an NBA lottery pick on that roster, several guys who can play at the next level. So why aren't they maximizing this? Well, we find out where the issues are. One of them might be on the bench with Scott Drew, who just might not be ready for this quite yet. Still an awfully young guy to be leading a program at this level. But one of the things we talked about on Friday as to why we like them against Texas, they're going to play with passion here. They're going to build a lead, and a team that knocks in their free throws well is exactly what you're looking for. That single-digit home favorite that's good at the free throw line, that's just been money in the bank to our pockets over the years. So here comes Baylor in the second half. You're up double figures. Exactly what you want. And for the game, they do shoot 79.4% at the foul line. Exactly what you would have expected. So why does it get away? Some real dumb basketball. And we're talking real dumb. Take a look at the breakdown over the final 4 minutes and 30 seconds against Texas. Twice they fouled guys attempting to shoot three-pointers. You know you don't do that. They allowed an offensive rebound on a missed free throw to be converted into a basket. And in probably the biggest fingernail on chalkboard stretch of all, from a minute 17 left in the game until 20 seconds left in the game, 3 consecutive turnovers. The time when you think you're going to get in the money because Texas is going to have to foul and your team's good at the free throw line, they go almost a full minute without getting a shot off at all, making it even worse. 2 of the 3 turnovers are immediately out of timeouts, timeouts where Drew would be designing a play on the sidelines to just get the ball inbound. So this is the issue that we found with Baylor. Yes, they are very talented, but sometimes being talented works against you as a basketball team because if you're capable of making spectacular plays, you try to make them. You see the alley-oop dunks. You see the spectacular things they do, and it becomes a mindset. Do we see them do the little things, take care of the basketball? No. Last Saturday against Missouri, they turned it over 19 times and they lost. You forgive that a little bit. Missouri presses well. We'll be talking about them in Money Time against Texas tonight. But this past Saturday against Texas, a team that doesn't press, 18 turnovers. That's hard to do when your opponent isn't pressing you. So now, this deep into the season, a team that's ranked in the top 10, and as Teddy said, was as high as number 3, they're number 252 in the nation in turnovers. That shows they're trying to make the spectacular plays instead of the smart ones. Hence, we have to question whether Drew is really ready to be coaching a top 10 team yet, and our own evaluation of Baylor probably going to change a little bit in the weeks ahead. Got a great letter from Joe in Hamilton, Ontario, talking about the Orlando Magic last week. And it fits so well into what we've seen from the Magic this weekend because Jameer Nelson and the Magic have become their own little version of Mickey Mouse. Now, we warned you about this team a little bit in this show over the past couple weeks. We've even turned Play of the Day tickets against them. There were pieces that weren't fitting all that well, but they were hidden because they played the number 28 schedule in the NBA. You look at the standings today, you see they're still 12-8. Like, okay, they've been to the playoffs several years in a row. They've been to the finals. They're 12-8. They got Dwight Howard. Things are fine. You know what? Things aren't fine in Orlando. So it's time to break it down and look at an underlying problem that tells us it may get worse instead of better. On Thursday's show, we focused about a rematch they had against the Celtics after they were totally humiliated in Boston on Monday. What happened in the second half of that game? They got humiliated again. It's okay. When a good team gets humiliated twice, they'll bounce back. So they got to New Orleans Friday night. They lose by 26. That's not easy to do. In fact, you probably would get no worse than even money that New Orleans doesn't win another game by 26 all season. So two humiliations. That's fine. We're coming home Sunday afternoon, playing Indiana. We have pride. We have character. We will get it together against the Pacers. It's pride time, right?
Or not, you know, because right now it's pride itself that may be the issue for Orlando or the lack thereof. You can take this team's past playoff runs and throw them out the window because the legacy that would normally come from that type of success is not a part of this team's mindset. Orlando has been essentially a ticking time bomb since the start of the season because of the way that Dwight Howard demanded a preseason trade and continues to demand a trade out of Orlando. It's not easy for the other players to buy in when they see that their superstar, the team leader, isn't buying in either. So why didn't it come together versus Indiana on Sunday in an obvious bounce-back spot for Orlando? Well, it may be that the friction between Howard and his teammates may be growing too wide to patch up. This was Howard's take after Friday's loss at New Orleans, a really embarrassing defeat. Quote, if you don't want to play, just stay in the locker room because it doesn't make sense for teams we should beat to just demolish us. It hurts to get out there and you play your hardest and you expect everybody to play the same way. I'm not calling anybody out, by no means, because we all have to get better. But if you don't want to be out there, don't dress up. So how did his teammates respond to that withering criticism? Well, lifeless. I mean, they looked absolutely lifeless in that 106-85 loss to Indiana yesterday. And it may not just be a split between Howard and his teammates. There's also a disconnect with the head coach, Stan Van Gundy, as well. In the last three games, Orlando has been outscored 158-90 in the second half, getting outscored by more than 20 points per game after halftime. Mark that down, 158-90. The next time the Magic take the court, meaning tonight, they'll still do it with a winning record, but you shouldn't think of Orlando in that way right now. There may not be a rabbit that Stan Van Gundy can pull out of a hat to make this team magical once again.
When we come back, it's time to head to the NBA and see if Teddy's too far under the weather to raise the roof. You're watching Vegas Sports Day. No pressure. Hi, I'm Dennis Silvers from, can't think of the name on my damn show, Golf and Other Four-Letter Words, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network, I think.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Malinsky's questioning whether I have the energy to raise the roof for money time. Are you kidding me? Yeah, a little bit under the weather doesn't matter. There's still money to be won, and that means it's time for money time. Exactly. You shouldn't have said anything. Bingo.
That's right.
This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's go to Memphis, where tonight the Grizzlies, about a six-point favorite over the San Antonio Spurs, total in that game, 189.5. And this is a San Antonio team, no question. They're coming off a frustrating overtime loss yesterday. They rallied from all the way back against Dallas. Couldn't get the job done in the extra session, losing by a single point. But it's also a San Antonio team. You look at them in this point spread range throughout the entirety of the season, and they've been dogs of 6 points or more twice so far this year. One time, +7 at Miami. One time, +6 at Oklahoma City. Miami's the best team in the East. Oklahoma City's the best team in the West. Memphis? Not really close to being the best team, even in their division.
So how does this happen? Markets do what they do. First, the opening line was a little bit off here. They made Memphis -5. What happens the minute that the Spurs go to overtime in Dallas? Same thing happens all the time in overnights. People blindly bet against the overtime team. Yet it simply doesn't apply. If you didn't see that game last night, and people who bet from 5 to 6 must not have, what a unique roll of the dice by Greg Popovich. They're down 18 in the third quarter. Listless, heading nowhere. He puts the reserves in as a unit, and they catch fire, and they get back in the game. So what does he do? He leaves them there. The reserves played or scored the last 51 points of the game. Tony Parker never came back. Tim Duncan never came back. The only one who came back at all, Kawhi Leonard, came back for the final defensive possession in overtime. That was it. So in terms of this overtime impacting the team, no. Tony Parker, 27-33. Tim Duncan, 23-02. No one got to 30 minutes last night. We were trying to find the last time a team had played an NBA overtime without a single player playing 30 minutes or more. We couldn't find it. So the people came in and are betting against that fatigue aspect. They may not necessarily be right here. Yeah, the Spurs did lose the game, but they were oh so close. A millisecond, if you watch the replay of that shot by Green at the buzzer, which everyone thought was good at first, literally just a millisecond away from winning it, that leaves you with a good energy going forward. It means the reserves have a little more confidence, but the starters that they're betting against, they're going to actually be pretty fresh.
And Memphis may not, in fact, be the team that's fresh in this instance. You know, this is their ninth straight game with a court change, meaning they haven't had a homestand in quite some time. They're coming back off a West Coast trip, and we always talk about how teams are traveling, you know, the West Coast teams that travel east, East Coast teams that travel west. That first came back is often a flat spot, and you have so many off-court issues to deal with, whether it's, you know, commitments that you've made or wives and girlfriends and kids that demand attention, whatever it is, teams often distracted in that first home game back. And it's a Grizzlies team that's starting to show signs that without Zach Randolph, they're not going to be that good. They had a relatively easy schedule initially when Randolph got hurt. They were able to plow through that schedule and win a bunch of games, make themselves look better than they are. But this is a team, you know, they've shot less than 39% from the floor during this current three-game skid. The only win they had on the road trip, they had to rally from down 16 in the second half against Golden State, or else they would have gone 0-4. And the loss to Phoenix on Friday, again, one of those games, like we talked about with Orlando earlier, one of those games where good teams are going to step up and play. Memphis didn't step up and play against the Suns. They were run off the court in the first half, made a game of it in the second half, couldn't get stops, couldn't hit shots when it mattered most, lost the game on a couple of free throws. That's not the sign of a team that I'm looking to lay six with in this particular ballgame.
Let's go to the Staples Center in Los Angeles. Potential playoff preview here, a couple of division winners. Oklahoma City taking on the Clippers. Right now the Thunder, a two-point favorite. And, yeah, we talked about schedule dynamics in San Antonio, Memphis. Seeing more of the same here. One of the reasons why the Clippers are a home dog, a role you're not going to see them in much this year, is what appears to be a scheduling issue. Oklahoma City has had 2 days to prepare, rested and ready, and yell the old notion when you had to play at Denver and at that altitude, it's hard to go back to back. But we wonder how important that's going to be tonight because the Clippers also had a couple of days off before Denver. They've actually got more than 24 full hours. If you take the tip-off time in Denver last night till tonight, it's 26 and a half hours. In terms of a recoup, the game was over early enough for them last night to fly back to L.A. And of course, sometimes we get lazy when we're putting notes together. Think, okay, you get back to L.A., you're going to sleep in your own bed. Think, well, no, this is the NBA. You're going to sleep somewhere within the vicinity, you know, of the court, not necessarily your own bed. This is the NBA, folks. Okay. So is that schedule impact enough to where the Clippers are supposed to be a home dog?
Well, you look at the Clips on the second night of back-to-backs. They've been pretty good in this role, particularly at home. Look at the last three instances of the L.A. Clippers at home on second night of back-to-backs. They beat Memphis 98-91. That was good for our pockets, and we used that as a play of the day. Didn't we use that as a play of the day?
It was a Cutty Sark. Yeah, exactly. Cutty Sark game.
I thought we did. They beat Dallas. Pretty good Mavericks team, defending NBA champs, 91-87. They beat Miami 95-89 in overtime. So last three tries in back-to-back, they were dogs in two of the three. They won all three outright. They covered the number in all three of those ball games. So don't know if you're looking for reasons to bet against L.A. tonight. I don't think fatigue should necessarily be one of those issues, even though yesterday's game was hard fought, even though four of their starters went 34 minutes or more in that contest, and even though they had to rally from behind in the fourth quarter using a lot of energy in that ball game. I don't know that, you know, and of course it was a game in altitude, which are the traditional, historical reasons that you're looking, oh, this team's tired, this team's gassed. I'm not so sure that's a situation that merits the point spread we're looking at today, even against the quiet Oklahoma City Thunder, who all of a sudden, oh, they got the best record in the league right now, better than Miami, better than Chicago, better than anyone in the West, OKC, all they've been doing all year, going on the road, winning games, and covering point spreads.
Now, already 8 wins for Oklahoma City on the road, 7 different venues. We're not going to have a penny on this game tonight, I think, unless the line moves, but we're going to watch it closely. Because when we get to playoff time, it's going to be matchup basketball. Totally different than in the regular season. When we talk about stats, trends, numbers, scheduling dynamics, there are some wonderful matchups between these teams that, as they will unfold. Caron Butler, a good defender against Kevin Durant? Looks like that may be the case. Interesting to watch. Serge Ibaka can actually deny the ball from Blake Griffin outside, but can he muscle up with him around the basket? Or are we going to see a little more Nick Collison, who looks like he might be a good defensive counter against Griffin? And how does Oklahoma City deploy the backcourt? Do we see maybe a little shifting gears by Scott Brooks here? Russell Westbrook on Chauncey Billups and Thabo Sefolosha on Chris Paul instead of the other way around? There's some real intriguing matchups. It should be some great basketball to watch. I'm just not sure if we can make money off of it tonight. The money we'll make from watching tonight will come later in the year.
When we come back, it's going to be Money Time Part 2. Yeah, Big Monday on ESPN. We're going to break it down right here on Vegas Sports Day.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Let's go to Morgantown, West Virginia, where we have the 183rd edition of the Backyard Brawl basketball style. West Virginia, 5.5-point home favorite against Pitt. And the Mountaineers, we all saw them get jobbed on Saturday. A non-goaltending call cost them from getting the game-tying bucket. Don't know if they'd have won it in overtime, but at least they would have had the chance to win it in overtime. Instead, they lose by 2. Great for West Virginia bettors in that game. Great for under bettors in that game. Not great if you like well-officiated basketball. But the question for tonight, does West Virginia bounce back off that loss? Do they come out flat and unfocused because they just had a chance to knock off one of the best teams in the country and didn't get the job done? What focus, what do we get from Bob Huggins and company today, Dave?
It's going to be a real issue here. First, we love Bob Huggins. Partially because of the type of guy he is, but also the fact that as handicappers, we can trust him. He is as straight of a shooter as any coach out there, and he's also good at anticipating some of the things that we want to be able to anticipate. Here's his quote when he's asked that very question. He says, "I don't know. I've told you 1,000 times I flunked mind reading. I don't know. It's day to day. I have no idea." Now, he's gone back and forth with this a few times with this particular team because there are so many freshmen in the rotation. And Huggins has a complex system. It takes a while to learn those defensive nuances that he puts out there. So he's had some frustrations with this team, but they still do what a Huggins team does. They play hard. And it's why there's a little bit of sentiment when we watch this game tonight. Actually, grew up right between the two campuses. It's one of the few rivalries out there where they cross the Mason-Dixon line. And maybe that doesn't mean anything in the 21st century, but it still does there. There is that city slicker versus hillbilly mentality, that little bit of north-south, and we're going to start to lose that. Both of these teams moving to other conferences, they'll continue to play each other every once in a while, not necessarily home and home the same year anymore. So we're going to lose that. But the one quote from Huggins sets things up. Now the second one that he brings, and it didn't matter against Syracuse, because with Fab Melo out, they were able to out-muscle them on the boards. But Pitt's number 3 in the nation in rebounding margin, number 1 in the conference. You've got to be able to board to beat Pittsburgh. The Huggins lament about his team, we can't jump over a wallet. And it's true. You look at Dennis Caliccioli, some of his big guys inside, there's not a lot of athleticism. They rebound with grit. You could do that against Syracuse, which is a little soft without Melo. Tougher to beat Pitt with just grit.
And the betting markets right now are continuing to have a hard time with the Pitt Panthers. You know, we saw Pitt go through what appeared to be just a devastating 8-game losing streak, dating from before Christmas through the first portion of their Big East schedule. Everything fell apart for the Panthers. They lost their composure in close games. They were banged up with injury problems and a lot of issues Fort Pitt. That's how a program of that level can lose 8 games in a row at any point. But now they've gotten healthier. And most importantly, Trey Woodall, who's made all the difference for Pitt offensively, 19 assists in 61 floor minutes over the last 2 games. He missed significant time earlier in the year when Pitt was struggling. So how do the markets power rate Pitt? You know, this is a team, all of a sudden, they've won 2 in a row. They've kind of, you know, come back to reality and started winning games. They've covered 4 of their last 5, so they've been an undervalued commodity. Now, I like this West Virginia. They've been moneymakers for me so far this season. I like them in a number of different roles, both as home chalk and as road dogs. But in this instance, I'm not convinced that the betting markets have Pitt right, and I'm not convinced that West Virginia is going to bounce back strong. Concerns here, if you like the Mountaineers, minus the points at home this evening.
Let's go to the ESPN nightcap in Austin, Texas. Right now, the road team, Missouri, a 1-point favorite over the host Longhorns. Several Texas issues you would have heard on the show last week. You know, as we laid out a play of the day case for them against them with Baylor on Friday, saw some weaknesses that we were looking to exploit. Those seemed to be there. The question down the stretch of that game was not so much Texas playing well to rally, but Baylor playing poorly. The other question, and this is the biggest one of the day for us, did a postmortem on Jacobon Brown for Texas last week. A guy who was having to carry too much of the load, seemed to be wearing down. Now, he got his shot back a little bit against Baylor. He went 11 for 22, scored 32 points, but he also played all 40 minutes of that game. So do we sense a turning point for him on Saturday, or is that heavy of a load, with this short turnaround to tonight, possibly going to take him a little bit off of his game again?
And there's such a big difference for these two teams in terms of their ability at crunch time. Texas could have 3 freshmen on the court during crunch time. Missouri, when it matters most, they're going to have 4 seniors on the floor. So the edge and experience goes towards the Tigers. If this game is tight, and obviously the point spread is saying it's supposed to be pretty tight, you would give Missouri an edge, assuming the power ratings are correct. Then we look at what happened in the first meeting between these two teams. And Missouri wins 84-73, and boy, they break down Texas's defense in that ballgame. The Longhorns, pretty good defensive ball club. Not that night. Missouri, 54% shooting for the game, 20 assists to only 9 turnovers. 4 different players had at least 14 points for the Tigers. Now, it is a Texas team that's 12-1 straight up at home this year. All they got to do is win this game to cover this number. And the only loss that Texas suffered on this floor came against pretty darn good Kansas team. And even that game, tight and competitive right through the final minute, Texas covered the point spread by a hook, even though they lost the game outright to Kansas. So not necessarily a home court that I'm looking to buck, but I can't help but think that Missouri is a better of these two teams. They showed it in the first meeting, Dave. And with the experience that the Tigers have, won't that come into play down the stretch?
We'd really like to think that it would, because Missouri does all the little things that you want at the end of a close game. And boy, look at the free throw shooting. You know, if Missouri's got the lead late, you're supposed to get the money. Marcus Denman shooting 91.5%, Michael Dixon 91.1%. And those are big samples for those two guys. You get the ball in their hands at the end of the game, you're going to win. As a team, 80% free throw shooting in the Big 12. But there is that one weakness. I mean, Ricardo Ratliff having a terrific season inside for them, but nobody else. So on the Big 12 road, they get into a physical game at Kansas State, they lose. Get into a physical game at Oklahoma State, they lose. It's that rebounding and toughness, because Missouri's only going to use 7 kids tonight. You would almost say 6 of the 7 are natural guards. It's Ratliff having to hold the fort down against the physical Texas team. If this line swings later in the day and we could take one instead of laying the 1, we'd put a little bit of Missouri in our pocket. But no, while we're watching this one, which will be a good game to have on your Prime TV, on one of the backup sets, we're going to be making a little bit of money.
Oh, yeah. Because it's play of the daytime, and we're going to go back to a game we talked about in the NBA just a few moments ago. That play of the day on the San Antonio Spurs, plus the 6 at Memphis. Grizzlies continue to be overrated. Spurs in a very unique situation for the second night of back-to-backs with no one on the floor, having played more than 30 minutes, or even 30 minutes, in yesterday's overtime decision. Look for San Antonio to be fresh enough to hang tough, maybe even pull off the outright upset. Give me the Spurs plus the points. That's the Vegas Sports Day play of the day for Monday.
Super Tuesday.
Super Tuesday tomorrow.
Super Tuesday.
Super Bowl fix. Be here or be square. Well, you can be here and be square. whatever you like.
We are most days.
Bottom line is, tomorrow is the Super Bowl preview show. Side total, we'll break it down all right here on Vegas Sports Day. Thank you so much for watching. Enjoy the games, and good luck. For Plimlinski, I'm Sivransky. We'll see y'all tomorrow.